Welcome and hello, everybody. This is the REI Society Podcast, where we are informing you everything real estate and business related so that you can be successful in REI investing. We're sharing the tools, tips, and stories from people who have already made it. And my name is Brandon Thompson, your host. Each week, we'll bring extraordinary guests so that you can learn real estate from the best. All right, Julian Culver, Brandon Thompson, REI Society. How are you doing, Julian?
I'm doing great, Brandon. You doing all right?
I'm doing good, man. Where do I see you at? Or what city of Atlanta? What city in Atlanta are you driving around in right now?
I'm right off of Metro Pilinton. So I'm in Adair Park right now.
Adair Park, okay. How's that neighborhood doing right now? It's doing pretty good, right?
Yeah, it's turning. It's turning pretty good. It's probably about 10% turn, so one in every 10 houses. Sellers are getting hit up by everybody and their mom who wants to wholesale, so they're getting call and mail and text. So they think that their house is super, super valuable, so they're looking to hold on as long as possible.
Yeah, they think their homes are worth $1 million because a lot of people are just hitting them up and, you know, like you said, mail and text and phone calls and things like that. They think that their home is a gold mine. And, you know, technically it is, but it's not as expensive as they want to make it out to be, unfortunately. So, Julian, you are 25. Tell me a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do, what your background is, maybe something about your youth, and just bring me from your beginnings to now, and let's just narrate the story and find out who you are and what you're doing.
Yep. So Julian Culver was born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia, right around the corner from Adair Park, actually off of Pryor Road in a neighborhood called Joyland. Single mom growing up, was, I guess, like wasn't really into anything. I got into sports around like 9 or 10 years old and that really shaped who I was and built all the habits and like my routines and mindset and everything. Yeah. And so football really made me just to keep it short. And in high school, played football, got a scholarship, went to Clark Atlanta, played there for 4 years. While at Clark, I met a guy who did real estate at a mayor's fundraising event. He was kind of tipsy when he came to me. He was like, oh my God, did so much money in real estate, did so much. My business made $20 million last year. My girlfriend's begging me to come home, but I can't because the money's calling me. She's mad, but I don't care. And then the guy who I was talking to before the drunk dude came and like just hopped in and just dumped all of that on us. He was like, oh, Julian's looking for an internship.
Yeah.
He's like, isn't that right, Julian? I was like, yeah, sure. I was like, I was going into my sophomore year of school. And from there, the guy was like, yeah, meet me in my office at this time tomorrow morning. And then I met him at his office and I think he was too drunk to like remember. So when I showed up, he was like, what are you doing?
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, you told me to come here. So that's how when I got into that office, there was a guy who owned a whole bunch of motels, a dude who was building townhomes and all this other stuff in like Florida. He had sold off a whole bunch of apartment units to a hedge fund in New York or something crazy. And then there was a guy who was flipping houses. And then there was the accountant who flipped houses and did all the accounting for everybody that worked in the office. And while I was in the office, I was just shadowing them, basically learning from experience, managing some of their Airbnbs. And then I asked one of the guys, like, what can I do to get in real estate as fast as possible? He was like, wholesale. This is back in 2016, so everybody wasn't on it like they are now. I was like, what is that? So he said, Google it. And then Googling led me to Bigger Pockets and just went down that rabbit hole of reading every article they put out and listening to every podcast. So eventually I started wholesaling or trying to wholesale when I was in school my junior year while trying to play football. So like printing out letters, mailing them, didn't know how to find people's number like it's so easy to do now. And got a few hit backs from the mailers, but I really didn't know what to say. So I was like, okay, I need to figure out another way to do this. So I heard somebody say the best way to learn something is just go work for somebody for free. So fortunately for me, I met this guy named John White, who's a financial advisor, like the biggest people like David Osborne, Mark Spain, those type folks. And then he introduced me to a guy named Tim Rowe, who started this thing called One Life Fully Live. They had a conference in Philadelphia, flew up there, met a guy named Austin Stack, who was wholesaling in Atlanta. And I was like, yeah, I'm trying to get into wholesaling for Atlanta, blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, okay, yeah, just like, let me know, hit me up in Atlanta. We can really talk. I don't think he took me too seriously. Found him on Facebook, kept hitting him up, was really persistent. I asked him for some advice. He'd tell me what to do. I'll go back and do it and tell him how it went. And I guess that kind of built like trust with him. He was like, hey, this guy is not a piece of crap and he's not lazy. He actually does what I tell him to do. I'm gonna let him come on with us. So like he like reached out to me. He was like, yeah, you wanna, you know, work with us? And I was like, sure. So started cold calling for them. And then in the midst of cold calling for them, this was like towards the end of football season, my senior year. In the midst of like cold calling for them, I was also studying to get my real estate license. Took the test like 5 times.
It was a little tough on you?
Yeah, just a little bit.
I had like 800 for a long time, man. And the first one, you know, I was a little pressured. I was not excited about, but I passed with like a B. But it was that broker's test. That broker's test was the one that really got me under my skin. I failed it twice, and then once I had to make peace with the Lord. I said, look, I'm going to do this one more time, God. If you don't let me pass, I'm not going into real estate anymore. I'm not going to do anything, because this was right after the recession. This is like 2008, 2009. Like, yeah. I want to advance and I just lost everything, $2 million. I don't want to make, you know, this about me necessarily, Julian, but I get to the point where like, God, between you and I, if I don't do this, if I can't pass, I am not going to do real estate anymore. So if you want me to be in real estate, you better let me pass this third time. So the first 2 times I failed, the third time I passed like a 80 something percent. So yeah, man, I understand how tough it can be for sure.
Yeah, one of the times that the first time I took it, the first time I took the state test. So I failed the class test twice, mm-hmm. had to pay for the thing over again. And then I passed the class test on the third time. So then I took the state test. The first time I took it, I failed by one question and I was like super excited. Like most people be like, oh, this sucks. But I was super excited because I was like, okay, I don't have to do a whole bunch of studying. Right. So I took it 10 days later and passed. But yeah. Yeah, while I was on that wholesale team, cold calling, then eventually it went from cold calling to acquisition manager to like running appointments and negotiating with people. Yeah, I was under contract.
Mm-hmm. So, yep. All right. So that's a big window right there. So single mom, you played college ball, you went to Clark, Atlanta, you met this drunk guy, you learned wholesaling, streamlining all that, and you started working for a wholesaling team and now you're cold calling. Like, dude, how old are you?
25.
25, man. So you've been doing this for what, 5 or 6 years now, maybe?
2 years.
Well, 2 years. Okay.
2016, I was trying to do it. 2017, I was trying to do it. Was getting my feet wet a little bit. But 2018 is when I actually started making money from it.
Yeah. So what I like about your story is like you didn't let failure hit you in the face or anything. You're like, you know what? I'm just gonna do something better for myself. I'm gonna make myself something. I'm gonna make something out of myself. And you just kept on going. And I understand you not only wholesale, but you flip properties. Like you said, you've got your real estate license and you're selling properties, wholesales, flipping, and working with people to sell to hedge funds too. So this is a lot to go over. Let's break it down into three sections. Wholesaling. You started off with wholesaling. Just give me like a, which you kind of already touched on it, but give me a breakdown of what the day-to-day would look like when you were trying to wholesale. And I'll just ask you some questions as we walk through this story, but I think you got a really interesting story, and I want to talk to everybody or let everybody know how this can be done and applied, and so on and so forth. So go ahead and let us know how that goes.
Okay, so with wholesaling, when I first started for a team, they were dropping like $30,000-$40,000 worth of mail every single month.
Direct, wow.
Yeah, direct mail. And they'll have like their targeted campaigns. Well, okay, we're going after landlords, tired landlords this week. Might get some professional landlords, probate and all this other stuff. But I would basically just sit and wait for a call and like wait for a lead to come into the database. And I call the lead and try to set an appointment as soon as possible and also qualify that lead before setting an appointment. So I would talk to them and basically find out what's the whole situation. Why are you selling? Why are you selling now as opposed to like not selling earlier? Or why not just hang on to the house? And then like their timeline and condition
of the
house.
Were they like, because you sent me a damn letter, man. They were thinking like that. You sent me a letter and you're asking me why I want to sell my house. I want to sell my house because you sent me a letter. Do you ever get anything like that?
Yeah, I got something like that. One guy told me, he was like, hey, so-and-so. He's like, yeah, what you want to pay for it? I'm like, what are you talking about?
I have dollar special.
Like, yeah, man, you keep sending me this letter. I'm like, thousands of mailers that go out. I'm not just sending, like, talking about your specific house.
Right.
But yeah, my day would just be spent on the phone, setting appointments, going to the appointment, negotiating, and getting houses under contract. And if we already had a house under contract, and it was my job to, like, sell it to the flipper or whoever the guy who was buying it from us, we would set showings up and I would coordinate those. So that was basically my day, sending appointments, running appointments, selling.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Well, so you did wholesaling for a while and then you started wholesaling on your own. I think you made a merge, what I'm seeing in a pattern and talking with you over the last few weeks. You've made a move to do this on your own. So what was that like when you left the team to doing your own thing? Getting your license, start flipping and selling to hedge funds. What broke you from the pack that said, I can do this on my own?
So this is how I left the team. I like to tell everybody this, like be honest as possible. Mm-hmm. So the guy, one of the people who I went out there to like negotiate with or whatever, He was going through like, and I still keep in touch with him to this day. He was going through a real situation that was like, okay, I tried the wholesaler's house. We tried to get it under contract at the price that y'all wanted to. It's not working. And he needs to sell fast because this is happening to him. So I listed it for basically free and got it sold for him to somebody who... I sold it through because I was hitting up somebody on Facebook and the MLS didn't even help. Somebody from Israel bought the house. That's why they was able to buy the house for what they did. They paid a way higher price. But The guy saw that. And he was like, okay, yeah, we don't trust you. You're off the team. I was like, look, if I wanted to list houses and like steal from you guys, it's like 300 leads that are assigned to me. How is it by now?
They just kicked you off. That's nuts.
Yeah, kicked me off. And that helped me learn the importance of always having your own thing and being independent. So I'm glad that happened, actually.
Yeah.
So then... Going and doing it on my own, it was frustrating. It was frustrating at first because I was so used to the mail and things happening so fast. Like I put 15 houses under contract in like 8 weeks. And all of them, every single one of them came from, I call, I meet you that day or the next day, I put the house under contract that day. So all of them were like one call closes. So then I didn't have the money for the mail. I didn't want to set that stuff up. So I had to start cold calling because that was the least expensive thing to do. And that was frustrating because of the time it took. Like till this day, like right now, I might have around like, because like using my license, I might have around 10 listings that come within the next 2 to 3 months off of people who I called in February of last year when I started on my own. Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's how it was. It was just frustrating and I used to get pissed off a lot, but because things weren't happening. But I just kept going and eventually start running appointments and getting things under contract. Had a couple of one-call closes, but I had like 5 or 6 of them from cold calling, but it just took a lot to start talking to around like 150, 200 people per week. It was tough at the beginning.
Right. So what made the merge from wholesaling to flipping and how did you maneuver from that?
So the thing, I was looking at them like, look, the folks who flip can pay higher prices. Mm-hmm. So it would make sense to flip. And so I was looking at it like this. So you... with wholesaling and flipping, right? per deal, when you look at per deal, the flipper almost always makes way more money than the wholesaler per deal. Now, unless you got these like expert wholesalers who drop a lot of mail and the average assignment fee is $45,000. But that's like the hybrid guys. Those are the exception. So a flipper might make like $25,000 to $30,000 off one deal. A wholesaler might make around like 10 to 15, saying, hey, if we can make more money on each deal and be able to convert at a higher rate because we can pay a higher price, that would make more sense. I don't care that more money would have to be put up and the time it takes to flip a house, like the time will be longer from like putting the house under contract and actually getting paid from it. I didn't care about that because I know once you got going, then it wouldn't stop. So that's where that idea came from. And since I didn't have any money myself, not to put up for like flipping, and I didn't work, I really dreaded trying to work with hard money lenders because they're racing too high. I just would represent a flipper. When I represent some people that I sold houses to as a wholesaler, I represent them as their agent on a lead that we got, and they would buy the house, and then I would do project management throughout the whole flip, and then I turn around and list it. So that's how I got into flipping.
Awesome. Well, let me craft the question this way. So you're selling the hedge funds now, and that's going to be a hard entry into specifically hedge funds. Getting into hedge funds, it's tough. I've done it, and they will work with you for a while, and they, you know, my experience, they've dropped you like a bad habit. How did you break into the mold as a 25-year-old, somebody that they probably don't think is has the experience or the know-how to facilitate bringing inventory to them in a proper way? How do you feel that? What was it like getting any kind of animosity that way, hitting them head on versus did you hit anything head on? I mean, were they open arms when you started working with these guys? And if so, how did you convey that you were the know-it-all in this industry? Does that make sense? I was all over the place, but hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah. So it was very easy for me because it's like, hey, I got a deal. You want it? So they was like, yeah, of course. We want to buy that. It's a good deal. And I had sold, when I was wholesaling, when it was like me and my girlfriend, we had sold a couple of properties to hedge funds ourselves because they had bought them off the MLS. That's how we first got exposed to them. Like, who are these people closing in 5 days, sending me a proof of funds of $11 million? Like, who is this? Sure. So then, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I'm just laughing. I'm smirking because I know this world. I think it's awesome. Yeah.
So then this guy named Eli Rose, who's a really good real estate professional in Atlanta. He was like, in Georgia. He was like, yeah, I got an opportunity for you. We got this hedge fund program, Renew, which is a property management company. They manage a lot of properties for these big hedge funds, about thousands of houses. So what Renew said was like, okay, we could put something together where we can bring hedge funds leads so we'll have more properties to manage. But since we're property managers, we're not really good at going out and like, we're not an acquisitions team. We manage properties. So we'll just partner with agents who are good at, who has those like acquisition skills that most wholesalers have, but real estate agents really don't have. And we'll just rely on them to bring us properties, and then we'll just split it up with them that way. So Eli told me about that. I moved from Keller Williams to Foundations Realty Group in Atlanta, which our broker is Michael Brock, who is like the plug when it comes to hedge funds. I sent him one house. He's like, oh yeah, these are the 6 or 7 offers right here. I'm like, oh. That was quick. It was only like 16 hours since I sent you it. But that's how I got involved with it, was that program. And then what I started doing, of course, we got the iBuyers. You got like the Zillows and the Wedgewoods, Curbios, Open Door, OfferPad, all those guys. But then you also got people who anybody can find. So I when we sold that house off the MLS, that first time in my girlfriend to that hedge fund, I was like, okay, they buying houses off the MLS. Let's see who else is buying houses off the MLS. So I just click the cash sales, and just filter out everything that way. And I just start clicking through the cash sales. And I literally go through like 150 of them, just looking at the, who's the buyer's agent, who's the buyer's agent. And I started seeing the same buyer's agents over and over and over and over again. And then some of the houses that I started seeing, I was like, they're buying these houses fully renovated.
Yeah.
And it's like cash. And I'm like, hold on. These are clearly funds. Yeah. So I probably picked up around like 7 or 8 hedge fund contacts just off of doing that alone. And one of the flips that we did, it was in Jonesboro. My girlfriend got it under contract. We sold it to, so it didn't, the wholesaling didn't, it didn't work. But since I had my license, I just told the guy like, hey, I can list it for you and sell it. And probably had an offer within like 2 days. But
sure.
I sold it to a guy who I now like, I'm really, really good friends with, and I get deals to him on a regular basis to flip. Hmm. I helped him with that, and then we turned around to sell it, and we was like, oh, where should we price it? There's really no comps in this neighborhood. I'm like, I'm looking at the area. We can probably get away with like 165 and possibly sell it for 160, 155 on the low end. And still walk away with like a 30% return on the cash that we actually put up. It was like, okay, yeah, sure. So we listed at 165, thinking we were going to get an offer around like 155, 160 at the highest. The hedge fund came in and bought it for 163 and closed in a week. So I was like, oh, there's another one. So then I started from there, like what wholesalers do, I just kept doing like that because I was like, my conversion rate should be going through the roof now because now I have them. Like, I can just sell the house to them and they pay the highest price. Like, one guy, he tried to go with some other dude. His financing fell through and he came back to me with the offer I presented him because, like, it don't get no better than that.
Jeez. So I need to get you to be my agent. My God. I need to sell these homes quick. And, you know, I'm over here waiting on home buyers. Like, the hedge funds, when they do buy them, they're so much easier to deal with. They very rarely ask you for repairs. You're closing them in a couple weeks and I missed that business. I actually did have, I don't know which one it was, but I actually did have a hedge fund buy my property in Douglasville, right outside of Atlanta recently. And that was great. A quick $25,000. You know, I didn't sit on the property long. I'm like, okay, I'm not getting rich on it, but you know, it was a nice quick sale. I love
it. Was it a brick house?
No.
Do you remember who bought it? The name of the company?
I don't handle my wife handles my own property. I mean, we're kind of a family business. I'm the one that looks at the properties and oversees the project management with my GCs. My wife, she's the agent. We've got a listing assistant. I've got an assistant that handles any tedious task I have. And then my daughter, both my daughters work for me. They send direct mail out for me. So we're sending several hundred letters a week to different targeted lists. So yeah, it's a family business, and actually, one of the assistants is my sister-in-law. So yeah, it's pretty cool. But does your girlfriend or anybody you know, family members work with you?
Yeah. So my mom, this had nothing to do with me getting my license, but ironically, my mom was an agent growing up. Yeah, and then like the crash, kind of was like, oh, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. But my girlfriend's. She's in med school right now. She's working on, she did some wholesale deals down here and she's working on getting her license up there in Rochester, New York. But we are like, I'm a real estate like junkie. So all that I listen to is real estate stuff and articles. And I sent an article on seller financing by this guy named Chad Carson. Right. And she read that and she actually bought a house during her first year in med school, which is supposed to be the hardest. She bought a house in New Orleans on seller financing terms. And she's asking me for advice the whole time. So I'm like, yeah, dude, this term. Don't mention anything about that. And she actually bought the house for free. She didn't put a down payment on it. Bought it for $34,000. As it is right now, you could probably rent for $950. And she just paid closing costs and her payments to the seller or now the quote unquote bank don't start until like April or May. That's the terms of the law.
Holy cow. That's nuts, man. I mean, my gosh, what a wonderful time it is to be in real estate. I mean, a lot of people think, the market's balled up. You know, everybody's getting top dollar deals, but you know what you're doing. You know how to target people as far as, and that sounds bad. If you're not into real estate, I say target people. It sounds bad, but obviously if you do direct marketing, you know, you're targeting the right crowds, people with high equity balances or Liz pendants, like pre-foreclosures or you name it, whatever. Even absentee owners, people like that. If you just send direct mail to them, or you start cold calling, send them the SMS text, dude, it's awesome. Let me ask you this: I think you being so young, you're 25 years old. I actually do a lot of one-on-one coaching, and I'm working with people in their. Actually, I do have one person in their 20s, but most of them are in their 30s to their 50s. What would be the number one thing that you feel like a newbie can do to accelerate their progress right now?
Network. Yeah. Network, go on Facebook and go to the investor market. Not like the investor like Facebooks and just like ask around and see who's actually doing this. Like a lot of people say they're doing this, but they're really not. So find out who the real people are and work for them for free. Just offer to do anything. Like, And don't do it with like, oh, okay, if I do this,
yeah,
I'm going to get this in return. Just do it because you just like, for me, I like talking with people in real estate. I'm really inspired by that. Like even like watching your Instagram, I'm like, oh, Brandon put up another video today. I'm excited to watch it. And I share it with all my friends who are in real estate. And I'm like, you know this guy? Like, look at this. And I'm like, Whatever, if I ever see like a opportunity to help somebody, I will. Because I think his name is Michael Meyer. He wrote a book called Seven Levels of Communication or something like that. Yep. And didn't read the book, but I saw him do a speech to this group called GoBundance on YouTube. And he was saying like, hey, and this is back in 2017, like there's ways that you can help people without necessarily like giving up your time and money. And I was like, I'm broke, so I need to know those ways to help people. And he was like, connecting people is one of them. So I would say just network and work for free and just offer to do anything for somebody. And a lot of people don't like that question. Can I help you? What do you need help with? A lot of people don't like that question because they have so much stuff. But I say get more specific on it and like, what is something that you do on a regular basis that you wish you didn't have to do? And I'll do that. Something like a more specific question like that.
Sure, sure. Well, let me ask you this. What does it take to get someone to sell their home to you? I mean, like who's the perfect candidate and what are you looking for in buying a home?
Yeah, so I have a lot of people. Everybody's like so, it's a huge misconception. Like, how do I get them to sell their home? How do I get them to sell their home? Like, people don't sell their houses because you sway them. Like, unless they're like a billionaire and it's like nothing is nothing to them. Like, that's a big financial decision. I don't know, unless you know, like hypnosis or something. Probably Tony Robbins can do it, but the average person couldn't do it. And people sell their houses because an event happens in their life. Like, that's the only reason people sell houses. Like, we had a couple, I did two deals. Me and my girlfriend did two deals with a couple, and it was because they wanted to pay back some medical bills. Other than that, they weren't going to sell the house. Every single person that we did a deal with has a situation, and I could probably name the situation on every single one. Like, I had
a problem solver. You're a problem solver. Yeah. That's what you are.
Yeah. And this is how you really get people to sell their house to you. You talk to them and you follow up with them consistently and you just be interested in them. Show them like, hey, I'm here to answer any questions that you have, or I can put you in contact with any guys who do renovations. But that's really how you do it. And sometimes I go get face-to-face with people knowing that they're not looking to make a decision right now. But I know that a face-to-face interaction makes it real. I'm not like everybody else calling them, texting them, sending them mail. They have met me and spent probably about 30, 45 minutes with me. And they told me their story and I told them my story. So that's how you actually get people to sell their house to you. Because when that life events happens, they want to sell. If they could, they would sell it to their own family. But some of them can't do that. So they're going to go with the next best thing, the people who they're most comfortable with and the people they trust the most. And if you're getting face-to-face with them and constantly talking with them, then yeah. One guy, I've been following up with him for like a year. I haven't met him yet. His name is Thomas. He's like, every time I call him, he has my number. He like knows it. He's like, hey, Julian, nothing going on today, but let me tell you what I read about in the newspaper. And I just like... He wants me to list his renovation probably in like the next 2 weeks. This cool guy.
Yeah. So you think networking is part of the reason why you convert as many sales as you do? and networking and listening to people?
Yeah, I would say, so I say the number one reason is because I actually took the time out to like learn a lot through like YouTube and reading articles and paying. I paid for one coach, that's for self-owners, but it still helped because he taught me about the face-to-face thing. So like once you look at enough YouTube videos, you start figuring out the conversations and the dialogues you should be having with sellers about subject two, seller financing. And I have a license to list in their property. I have hedge funds that can make offers. Wholesaling, you can represent somebody who wants to buy the house. So like once you can do all of those things, it's like, we're going to work something out. If you can't work something out with me, then you're just not going to do anything with the house.
Yeah.
Cause like I can do everything. Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Dude,
so you know what excites me is, well, I don't know actually. Did you have a father figure growing up? I know you said you had a single mom. Did you have a father figure growing up?
Not really. Yeah. My grandpa here and there, he was like in and out because of drugs. And then I had my coaches in high school. I had my football coaches and my teachers. So those are like my father figures mostly. Yeah.
Okay. So do you feel like possibly having an absentee father is what is driving you to succeed? Because you feel like, this is a deep question. This is what I do. This is before I made the switch over from Rise Above the Ashes to REI Society. It's all about why people get to the level that they're at because they don't give up. And a lot of it, you know, stems off of stuff from their youth. So do you feel like you're as successful as you are because you didn't have a father figure and you've got to prove something to the world, or at least to you, maybe not to the world or your mom or anybody, but at least to you, like, hey, you know what? I'm good enough, damn it. I can do this. Is that something you feel inside you, like some natural like inclination to take over?
When I was younger, that was definitely what I was thinking about. Like when I was playing football, I was like, I always used to be like, I'm the reason no one can make excuses. I don't have no dad. I don't have this and that and that and that. And I'm just going to bust my butt. And if I can do it, anybody can do it. And that was like my mindset. But then once I start, now I'm like highly competitive. Oh my God. Like I love Mark Spain because they said, why do you do it, Mark? Why do you do it? And everybody has this like, quote unquote, deep why. And Mark says, I just want to beat you. I'm like, yes.
Yeah, I've never like, talked to him. He seems like a really cool guy though. Yeah.
He is. And that's one of the things that's driving me, competitiveness. But with going back to the dad thing, I think like not having someone there or like just to talk to and like confide in sometimes, I think that it is a piece of like what drives me. Cause at this point, it's like once you make enough money to really just do what you want to do, and you need something else, so you're going to get complacent. And the whole thing that's driving me is every kid that went to my high school or is at my old high school right now coming up through that football program because they go through the most. They might be at home and no utilities. Golly, no utilities. They don't have no food. The only time they eat is at school, and you will never know because they never say anything. I'm like, I want to be able to put them in a position where they can come out because they're not going, a lot of them not going to college. And some of them, I don't want to go to college because of the debt. And then you get out and you have no skills because really a degree, you go to college, it really don't teach you something, anything. And this is coming from somebody who was there for 4 years and then was like, okay, I dropped out.
Yeah.
And I just want to be able to put them in a position to make money immediately. I want to put them in a position to like learn about personal development and get into like reading books and stuff like that. And that's the main thing that's driving me is them.
Good. That's awesome, man. Well, you look like you got a pretty healthy work-life balance. I mean, you're fit as all can be out. I guess that stems from you being an athlete in college, but going through your Instagram pictures, like you're working out all the time. I mean, if you're doing real estate like you're doing, how do you have time to work out as much as you do? Like, dude, that's freaking badass. Like I guess I've done it. About 4 years ago, I was really, really fit. I had a small back injury. I had a pretty big back injury. I got flipped upside down in a car 14 years ago. And we got flipped upside down, landed after flipping three times. My wife and kid was in there. And 10 years later, I started feeling something in my lower back. And that was like 4 years ago. So I got to the best fitness of my life. Back in 2016, 5'8 frame, 155 pounds, just muscular, probably not as muscular as you are now, but it got me to the point where, you know, I can't work out like that. So how do you work out hard with the schedule you have? I'm going to make this a two-part question because it'll give you a little more context. Like now after I'm not giving myself the time to work out, I've personally got to the point where I'm like, I'm not really motivated to work out anymore. I know it's important, but it's because I'm busy. I don't know if I want to do it anymore. So I let days go by and then I'm like, oh crap, I got to really get back into this because I long for those days where I was really, really fit again. So somebody that's got maybe an injury, I'm sure you probably know that with somebody in, you know, in sports, but, and then B, like how does a business person that stays busy, that is consumed by the passion of our, let's say skill set or heart, real estate, how do you have the time to do that? So I'm just kind of curious to hear from you. So these are the different things I try to look at every aspect of people's lives when I interview them. And, you know, I've done a lot of research on you. I'm like, oh shoot, this guy's freaking buff as heck. So tell me more.
So I'm not really that big. It's just in the pictures, I don't stand next to anybody. So I just got a my body fat percentage is just really, really low. But yeah, on the first part, like somebody with an injury is like, still go to the, you know that guy, what's the guy's name? He has no legs and no arms. Nick Sense something.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I can't.
Yeah, he's snowboarding, body builds, like God. Like so if he does that, there's no excuse for anybody.
No excuses. Extreme ownership of the situation, like Jocko Willink says.
Yeah,
that's fair. Well, I mean, what do you work out about 30 minutes to an hour a day, or how often do you work out?
So I work out probably around, it depends on which day because I'm trying to get stronger now. So if it's like a bench and squat day, I really might be in there for like 2 hours. But like a regular day, it might be like an hour. And typically I try to do it in the morning, but if I can't do it in the morning, then I just do it in the afternoon. I time block all my days on like a little note card. Mm-hmm. So I just write it out and I make sure that like even with real estate, it's not as time consuming for me because like my 4 hours in the morning from 8 to 12, lead generating. So I'm just calling people and following up with people. And then from like 12 to about 1, I'll work on some deals, make sure those are getting closer to closing. But I only run 2 appointments a day, like 3 to 5. And what a thing that keeps my schedule clear in the afternoon is I'm only going on qualified appointments. So I'm not just talking to anybody. I'm only talking to people who are like serious about selling and who want to sell or need to sell. So that's one of the things that keeps my schedule clear, only working with folks who are serious. So I might work out in the afternoon if I don't have any appointments or I know at 3 or 5, I'd be done. But most of the time I try to work out in the morning around like 5:30, 6, try to just knock it out. Wow. And then I have a guy, Joshua. This man goes to bed at like 7 and wakes up at like 2. Okay. So if your sleep schedule is like that, you can't do anything else in the morning except working out.
Hey, dude, this is really impressive. So what I like about this is you're 25. Like, dude, no, I was committed in my 20s. That's when, so from 20 to 22, I bought 20 rental homes. And I was flipping 10 homes a year. By 27, I lost everything, but and even when I lost everything, I kept on going. But the whole key is you just do the work. You get out there and you set your schedule. You know, my next question for you was going to be what is it like in a day in the life of Julian? So you just told that. But it's the people that are time blocking that really know what they're doing. They're programmed, setting a routine, and they're the ones that are actually making this crap happen. And that's what I appreciate about you. Like, you ain't making any exceptions. You're going out there and doing the work. So, I mean, heck, dude, I don't know what your net worth is or whatever, but you're going to be extremely, extremely wealthy by the time you're 40. I mean,
yeah, I'm trying to be like you.
Well, I'm 37 and I'm doing all right, man. I mean, it's been a long ride. I mean, I lost everything halfway through it. Then I had to reinvent myself and start all over again, which sucked. But I will say, man, just keep doing what you're doing because it's really inspiring. I've got so many people I coach that are just trying to figure it out. And I'm having to push them and nudge them and like, no, just it's as easy as that. Just do it. Nike, just do it. So
yeah. And for the people who like find trouble like with motivation. I read a book called Awakening the Giant. Everybody's like, everybody's coach is Tony Robbins, right?
Seems like it.
I read a book called Awakening the Giant by him. And he was talking about getting massive leverage on yourself and how everything that we do, every decision we make is a pain or pleasure decision. So every decision is based on, I'm either trying to avoid pain or I'm trying to get the pleasure. So if somebody's like, oh, I don't want to call, you're trying to avoid some type of pain. Or you, the pain, you have to make the pain of not calling be more than the pleasure that you get by just sitting around and like, I don't know, eating chips or something, or watching TV. And I wrote down like on a Google Doc, like a little word thing, for when I'm feeling like that, I read it and it's, and I connect a lot of pain to not cold calling. Like the pain is so great when I don't make calls that I rather just make, I just rather just deal with making the calls and not doing it. Cause it's like, I have integrity. It's like, it's like kind of extreme stuff. Like you have integrity flaws, you're a fraud, you're not who you say you are. You want to be the reason why other people succeed and get somebody else to like, get out of their situation and help you boys at Carver. But here you are being lazy and not getting on the phone. So it's like, what kind of person are you? Who we want to look up to that? So it's like stuff like that. And I'm like, oh.
Drop the mic.
Yeah, so I read that. I get to making calls real fast. And it works every single time because it hurts.
Right, right. Well, so let's just run through a few questions, a few rapid fire questions. I mean, you pretty much told your story. You've told a little bit about your life. What you're doing currently and, you know, in the beginning. So let's just start off with a few rapid fire questions. I'm going to incorporate some new ones specifically for you. What's your favorite thing to do? Wholesale, to flip, or to be a real estate agent?
I definitely like being a real estate agent more, the most. Yeah, right. Being a real estate agent is great. Because like with wholesaling, you got to come in there and it's like, you're working something out with them and you're helping them out. It's not like as life-changing as being a realtor is. And flipping houses is the same thing. Like you sell a house, it's more of like a business. Like you're not really, like you don't really get the emotions. Like I'm a high I, if you didn't know. I'm like a 99 high or something like that. Yeah. So like I like seeing people get really, really excited when they buy a house or I help them sell a home or they get that hedge fund offer and they're like, oh my God, thank you. Cause I've been dealing with investors and they've been coming in at 115, 120 was my highest offer. And you were able to come and get my house sold for 150 and we did it in 2 weeks. Like, I just like being able to, I just love people and I can have the biggest impact on their lives through being a realtor.
Yeah, dude, that's an awesome answer. What's your favorite book and why?
My favorite book.
Two or three if you need to, but you know, yeah.
I read a lot. So, man, it's between the compound. So my favorite book is The One Thing. And then like the immediate backup to that is like either Compound Effect or Slight Edge, and they're really similar. But The One Thing is like a book that I think everybody needs to read in life. Because it just talks about like getting very clear on your priority. It's not priorities. Priorities, like that word itself got made up later on. It's the priority. What is the most important thing that you can do by doing so that everything is easier or unnecessary is that question. And it's like, if I want to achieve all my goals, if I want to help all these people, if I want to do all of that and I work backwards, okay, if I want to go to Vegas, I had to have money. If I want to take so-and-so, I had to have money. Where's the money going to come from? Clothes. Where do the clothes come from? Da-da-da. Like appointments. You work it all the way back to your one most important thing. And it's call, for me, it's calling. Getting on the phone and calling. And yeah. I just think everybody should read that because it's like you can apply it to different aspects of your life. Like literally when I was looking at this, like if I just call, like cold call and follow up for 4 hours a day, I can achieve 90% of my goals just from doing that. Yeah, so this is The One Thing. And then I'd probably say The Slight Edge is the immediate backup. Because it's like, he's like, what does it take for you to go from, I guess, we say broke to like barely getting by. Like not having any money at all to just struggling. Like it's going to take you to do X, Y, and Z. Okay, what is it going to take you from going from broke and struggling to being able to pay your bills, do more of X, Y, and Z, like whatever got you to the next level, keep doing that. And it's just like little things day by day. It's like, how did the company get this big? It wasn't just one miraculous feature, one miraculous act. It was the little things that they did day by day by day. The mundane tasks, the stuff that people think is insignificant, but it really paid. I just love that book.
I love it, man. Dude, your passion, you know, to learn and to do is freaking contagious. Like, I'm getting excited. I want to, you know, if it wasn't starting to get late, I want to go back to work again. I want to get my hands on something, you know, my hands on something and start reading and all that good stuff. I don't know if you know this about me or not, but I am a movie/film buff. I love like really good quality movies, but I can also chew on some pretty crappy movies too. But so this is always a question I ask, but what is your favorite movie or documentary and why? I'm a pop culture junkie, so I always ask these questions. Show you're human.
My favorite movie is probably, and I was trying to think about this too before we got on here. Oh man, this is probably something with, what's the movie with Kevin Hart? Nah, I know what my favorite movie is. It's Step Brothers.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, that movie's funny. It's just so stupid. And then me and my friends, we get together and we do dumb stuff. You know, it's like, that movie goes hand in hand. When I'm not doing real estate and working out and stuff, like what you see on Step Brothers is how I think. Like, oh, that was so funny. I almost fell off my dinosaur. Like I say stupid stuff like that.
I used to, when I was in my late teens and or mid to late teens, a few of my buddies and I, we had the old video camera that you put on your shoulder before they became part of your phone. Mm-hmm. I was riding around. I wanted to be an actor and stuff and a documentarian and filmmaker and all that junk. That was where my passion was and where I wanted to go. And we would go do the kind of Jackass stunts, kind of like that show Jackass. We would go out into the public. So there's one time I planted my cousin in the bushes with the camera across the street. And then I had a driver driving I had a little 1996 Dodge blue Neon, a Dodge Neon. And we had planted me in the trunk of a car with just my boxers on, tied my hands up and stuffed a sock in my mouth.
Oh, man, this is great.
So the plan was to go into the gas station, busy gas station, which we did. The driver starts pumping gas. He kind of lightly opens the trunk. All of it's staged, not and planned, obviously. Just enough where nobody will notice it, but enough to unlock it so that I can kick it open. So I kick it open and I jump out and then I do the, just in nothing but underwear. And I'm looking both ways and I start running around in circles, screaming and all that with a sock in my mouth. And I just start waddling down the road, down the highway. All of a sudden, everybody's coming out of the gas station and looking, seeing what's going on. Of course, the driver jumps in the car and hauls butt and drives down the street like he did something wrong. And we're freaking people out. And the camera guy's right across the street filming all this. And three or four people, getting on their cell phones, which was, relatively new at that point in the late 90s and whatnot. But dude, it was so funny, man. Like, I've got several stunts like that caught on video camera, on VHS. I got to convert them to digital. Maybe that'll make it on my Instagram or my TikTok one day. I don't know. But that's just reminded me of that. I'm having flashbacks about my youth now.
That's perfect. You sit down and do that. Let me know.
I used to go the mall. Let me finish this story for you. I used to go up in the local mall and I would do like the dead guy. So I just walk in a busy mall where people walk around me and I just lay down. I just go face first. I'm laying down dead. And then we would go up into busy stores and things like that and go into the parking lots and do that. And we had a swarm of people one time go around me and, it's so funny. They would go in and like, dude, are you okay? And I'm just sitting there dead. They start calling the cops, calling 911. And I'm still sitting there. I'm waiting and I've got somebody playing a video in this from far away. And all of a sudden, as soon as I heard that the cops were on their way and the ambulance, I'm like, I walk up, start walking on and don't even look at them. Everybody's like, is he okay? Is he okay? So yeah, man, anytime you're down to do some crazy stunts, I'm all about it. That's my pastime that I'll never get to do anymore.
I was so down to do that. My friends, I got stuff on my Instagram. You probably got to go down to the bottom to see it. But like, I'll go up to the cash register and I'll be filming myself from the bottom of my phone. I'm like, she'd be like, oh, your total is 873. I'd like, I don't know if you noticed or heard, but it's people around the store talking about you got a thing for guys that pay 873. Yeah, and I just stuff like that. And they'll start laughing, but yeah. Have you heard of David Dobrik on YouTube?
No.
What you just talked about, he does pranks like that, and he probably has around like 15, 16 million subscribers. Like, I'm totally down to do that.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, man. Well, I think you'll make more money in the long run with real estate. You're doing awesome. I guess, let's see, any last parting questions that I have for you? Let's ask it again. You come up with another answer. What's something that a newbie that wants to just start out in wholesaling, what's the number one thing they can do outside of networking?
Go to YouTube. Everything's on there nowadays. Go to Brent Daniels TTP and watch every single video that he has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I learned a lot from that video. I've implemented a lot of the stuff he puts on YouTube, and I can't believe he's giving that stuff away for free. But it has made a significant difference in what I do personally.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, so let's just wrap up with this. If you got anything you want to promote or anything you want to pitch, feel free. And or if not, just tell us where people can find you on the social internet and webs and all that junk. You can tell I'm 37, obviously. But yeah, just tell me where people can find you.
Yep. So don't have anything to pitch, but yeah. You can reach out to me at Julian Colvard on every social media platform, JULIANCOLVARD. Yep. Yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, dude, it's been a pleasure having you here. I thank you for coming on and spending your time with us. It's been great.
Yep, no problem. Thanks, Brandon.